Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Locker Room. I'm your host, Tommy Tellerino, and alongside me today is the Theo Epstein of Madden franchise rebuilds, Jordan Navarro. Jordan, how you doing today?
An unexpected intro. Theo Epstein, you threw that name. That was a wild card.
Got to keep you on your toes.
Yeah, I'm doing well, man. You know, I just got out of class not too long ago. It's the weekend, and a little over 48 hours, it'll be the end of the Cowboy season, so, you know, life is good.
Calling the shot right now?
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll get right into it. But last weekend was super wild card weekend, and there were some thrillers last week. I'll say that. I mean, we started off the night. Seattle San Fran looked like it was going to be a good game, and then Mr. Brock Purdy took over, and then yeah, go on. Were you going to say something?
No, never mind. Go, okay, I'll let you.
Okay. All right. And then we had a absolute thriller in Jacksonville with the Chargers choking a lead and Jacksonville walking away with a 1-point win. We saw Buffalo and Miami actually compete. We said this was going to be a blowout. We were wrong. Shocker. And then you had the Giants go to Minnesota, and that was a pretty good game. In my opinion, it was a pretty slow, methodical game. You know, I wasn't really interested by the second half, but there were some good highlights from there. And then you had the Bengals host the Ravens. Bengals defense came up clutch, ended up getting a 24-17 win. And then Monday night, we saw Dallas walk into Tampa and act like they own the place and dominate, really. But I'll let you take the floor, Jordan. Sounds like you had something to say.
Well, you know, Geno Smith said they wrote him off, and he ain't right back. Well, Geno, this is why. You lost. You didn't do anything. You didn't accomplish anything this season. No, I'm playing. Geno had a great year. Seattle had a surprising year, but Tommy, like you said, it looked like it was going to be a good game. It looked like Brock Purdy was shaken up a little bit. He had some rookie jitters in the first half, and then as the 49ers have done all season, second half adjustments came through. DeMeco Ryans and that defense were just on another level, and Brock Purdy settled in. And he started the game. He was 9 of 18 in the first half. He ended 18 of 30, which is his worst completion percentage game of the season, I'm pretty sure, in this game that he started. But Tommy, I mean, it was an embarrassment of riches on the field. Christian McCaffrey had 15 for 119. Deebo Samuel got, you know, some handoffs for the first time in a while, 3 for 32. They didn't even get Elijah Mitchell involved. He had 9 carries for only 2 yards. Like, he didn't even really get involved, and they still won 41-23. Deebo had 6 for 133 through the air. Brandon Ayuk had 3 for 73, got hit on 3 big crossing routes. Juwan Jennings came up with 2 huge plays. George Kittle had 2 for 37. McCaffrey was involved in the pass game. Like, you know, it was the full show, the full Kyle Shanahan experience. And Brock Purdy led it all, 18 of 30, 332 yards, 3 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. Just phenomenal. Phenomenal. During the second half, complete domination. And that was the San Francisco 49ers no one wanted to see in the playoffs.
Life is good.
I mean, life is good.
That's all you got to – only way to sum it up, really. But I think you hit almost every point. I'm not going to lie. That first half, I was like, is Seattle actually going to compete with him the whole game?
Yeah. I mean, and that's what everyone wanted to see was Brock Purdy. I'm not, you know, I saw on, what was it today? I don't know if it was NFL Live or something, but they were comparing Brock Purdy and Dak Prescott. And like, it was, listen, Brock Purdy is a 7th round rookie. He needs to be treated as such. I'm perfectly fine with saying he's the worst quarterback in the playoffs that's left, okay? I don't think it should not be a shock to anyone, okay? That doesn't mean he's bad. That just means he's not as good as everyone else. But if he had played like he did in the first half the entire game, The 49ers would be in some trouble right now. But the fact that he calmed down and was able to just execute the game plan reinstalled a lot of confidence that I have in him, especially coming off that shaky first half.
Yeah, the first half looked rough. I get that some of the weather conditions are probably fighting against him. But even so, a couple of those balls, I was like, that is nowhere near Deebo Samuel or George Kittle. But, you know, he settled in, and he threw for over 300 yards. Deebo did have the long touchdown. I believe it was like around 75 yards. That added to the average. But still, he did what you needed him to do. And he didn't turn the ball over. He made accurate passes when he needed to. And he stayed calm. That's the thing that I took away most from him is – he didn't fall under the pressure after that bad first half.
Yeah, and, you know, the throw that everyone keeps showing to Juwan Jennings, that's a bad throw. Objectively bad throw, because the safety should have picked that off. He threw it to the inside on the safety side. He should have thrown that ball outside towards the sideline. I don't think he could have – I don't know if he could have gotten it there or not, but he threw it inside on a rope. It was a good throw, you know, velocity-wise and where he threw it, but – the safety was right there, and it probably should have been broken up or picked off. It probably shouldn't have been completed. But other than that, in the second half, I didn't really see anything too major that I was concerned with. This is the best game Deebo's probably had all season. It was really good to see him involved the way he was. And I don't want to say I forgot about Deebo because he's one of my favorite players, but it was, like, since McCaffrey's been there and Deebo was injured down the stretch, obviously, I think people forgot what he brings to the 49ers offense. And I think this is a good reminder because he took that. I mean, it wasn't a long pass. Was it like 8-10 yards? And he took it to the house. And you saw everyone, like Brandon Ayuk, set up a beautiful block. And that's what the 49ers are all about. They all are dangerous with the football in their hands, but none of them are selfish. They are all willing to block and let the other guy make the big play.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up how versatile Deebo can be, like when you get the ball in his hands. I think we're going to see a lot more of that this week. I think they're going to play a little bit more physical. They're going to run the ball a lot because the key to beating that Dallas defense is playing physical and running the ball and keeping that defense out on the field and getting tired. But I will say, after that first half penalty towards the end, I was like, oh my God, Jordan's probably a nervous wreck right now.
Yeah, Jimmy Ward is an idiot, but it's fine. We settled down. We're a second half team. We settled down and did what we had to do. DK had a great game against us. He had 10 for 136 and 2 touchdowns. You know, that's where we can get beat is in our secondary. It's not, it's a very good secondary, but it's definitely the weakest part of our defense. And if you can contain our pass rush a little bit, you know, you can definitely pick apart our secondary a little bit in our zone. But we play a lot of man. We play a lot of drop coverage. We're not going to give you the opportunity to just sit soft zone like Tampa did against Dallas. And we saw what Dallas did to that.
Yeah. And Seattle, where do you go from here? Because you're going to have a high draft pick. You got some salary cap space. I think they're going to have an interesting offseason.
Yeah, I think life is good. You know, I thought going into the season, Pete Carroll was going to retire and they were just letting him ride it out. No, he's going to build this team again. And I think Seattle is a team that is, excuse me, is going to quickly rebuild. And I think going into next year, using the draft pick, using the capital that they have and assets that they have, could be really, really good next year. You know, barring like Geno being terrible, because I don't think they're going to get another quarterback. They might draft somebody late or something, you know, maybe like a project, but it looks like it's going to be Geno's team next year, which rightfully so.
Yeah, I think he definitely earned the spot. It's kind of shocking that, you know, going into the year, we didn't know if he'd hold on to that starting job. We thought it could be Drew Lock, and he fought for that position during the offseason and preseason, and he earned that spot, and he did very well with it. Best year of his career so far. I think you might see some more consistency from him next year. For Seattle, what do you do with that top draft pick? Do you go offensive side or defensive side with that pick?
I think it's just best player available. You know, what they do with Tyler Lockett is going to be interesting because, you know, do you trade him or what? If you got DK locked up, that's your one. So I think it's just best player available. You know, if you take an edge rusher, they do need one. And that's where I think they'll lean is towards the edge rusher. But they could take a linebacker. They could take another offensive lineman if they wanted to, although I do like their two tackles that they have. So it'll just depend. I think they are in a great spot because they can take position of need if they have to, or they can trade out. But I think they have a really versatile draft strategy, although I do think they will lean towards edge rusher.
Yeah, and it helps, you know, their tackles played amazing this year, except against the 49ers. The games against the 49ers did not look well for them. But, you know, they grabbed Kenneth Walker last year. He had an amazing rookie year, I felt like. I think he'll build off of it, and he's going to be a player to watch out for in Seattle. Anything else you want to hit before we move on to the next game?
No.
Next game, man. Jaguars come back. They rallied from 27 down. They ended up winning 31-30 with probably their only home playoff game of the year. And everyone was just shocked, I'd say. but, yeah, we call Dougie P taking over the South. They're on to something right now. They're hot.
Well, let's break it down, Tommy, because in that first half,
break it down from a fundamental standpoint. They were figured out. Yeah.
But they were figured out. Trevor Lawrence looked awful, okay? It was the worst game I had seen from him all season, and it had come at the worst possible time. They disguised their coverage really well. I want to say they were playing, like, some type of quarters coverage, I believe, but Michael Davis was playing really, really well. And the Jags just, they weren't doing anything. But going into that second half, Michael Davis went out, and then Dougie P started to scheme some things up that started working. And Tommy, you know, I know we both watch the sports media. A lot of talk has been had about whether this was Justin Herbert's fault, whether it was the defense's fault, whether it's Brandon Staley's fault. To lose 27 up in a playoff game, it is a total collapse at all levels. It's not one person's fault or one unit's fault. Brandon Staley, I'm not a fan of him. He does have the team's trust. It's obvious. He's a defensive guy, and I feel like he got outcoached in the second half terribly. Now, the first half, he said, you know, it didn't look like that for the first half. Sure. But you have to adjust to what they're doing to beat you. That didn't happen. Not at all in the second half. Justin Herbert, I can blame him for not making some of those third downs and prolonging drives and killing the clock, sure. But they have no run game. I'm tired of Austin Ekeler being included in the top five running backs, top 10 running backs in the league. He can't run. He is not a special runner. Austin Ekeler is a very good receiving back who's a okay runner. But when it comes time to kill the clock, he's not the guy you want. Joshua Kelly is not the guy you want either. I don't know if they have that guy on their roster. But to be honest, Austin Ekeler is probably better spent in a committee. He's a great athlete. He's a great weapon. You can still use him like that. He can still be a focal point in your offense. But he cannot kill the clock. He can't be he's not a good running back. He's not a good, pure runner. He's not. I don't think he's in the top 10 in the NFL in that.
And listen, just because he's probably the number one back in fantasy football, that doesn't translate to being one of the best running backs in the league as a runner. I think a lot of people hype him up with his running just because of what he does in fantasy football. There's a lot more aspects to it.
Exactly.
I'm with you. You got to blame everyone. You got to blame Joey Bosa for some of the penalties, especially the last unsportsmanlike conduct that he got. I mean,
yeah.
I get that you're upset with the call. Could it go as a false start? Maybe. But if you look back at the whole game.
Yeah, listen, the tackle was definitely getting away with going half a step early. I absolutely agree with him. But it's an adapt or die league, and he wasn't getting called on that all night. Yeah. So, yes, it's frustrating, but if it's not going to get called, you're going to have to deal with it.
I was just about to say, if you look back at the whole game, on both sides, they were letting the tackles get away with it. So, I like you said, it is frustrating, but you can't go out, slam your helmet, especially right near an official, and mouth off to him just because you're upset that you think they're getting away with a false start. Well, if they're not calling it all night, they're not going to call it when they're in the red zone. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, that led to the two-point conversion, which was I didn't expect it to be like that. I thought it was going to be a QB sneak, that two-point conversion. I didn't think he was going to reach over like that.
Well, Trevor Lawrence said that was completely ad-libbed.
Yeah,
that was not the call, and he decided to do that.
I'm not surprised, I'm going to be honest. But like you said, Staley got out-coached in this game in the second half. Dougie P went into that locker room. He cooked up some plays, and especially on, I believe it was 4th-and-1 or 3rd-and-1, the Travis Etienne run, beautiful call. Everyone thought it was going to be a QB sneak, and it was basically just like kind of like a jet sweep, really, with Travis Etienne. Got him into field goal range, won in the game. For the Chargers, this is something where I think it describes their whole season. You know, they rode some highs, they looked amazing, and then there were some other points in the season where they just looked terrible.
It's been like this for the entirety of the Chargers franchise.
Yeah.
They blow big leads, they have heartbreaking losses in the playoffs, and I know we're going to talk about this because it's coming up, so I'll go ahead and segue into it. Where do we go from here? You fired a domestic terrorist at Joe Lombardi. You got rid of him. Thank God. But I don't think now I would have fired Brandon Staley. That, you know, if he has the confidence of the team, that's fine. He's a defensive guy. At least get new offensive coordinator, new QB coach. That's what they're doing. But Tommy, can't stop there. First off, Brandon Staley should be reprimanded for playing Mike Williams in week 18, because guess who would have played amazingly in this game and would have helped them tremendously in this game on those third down situations, you know, in the second half? Mike Williams. But no, we got him injured in a meaningless game. That's what we did. This wide receiver core is slow. Okay? I didn't know Jalen Guyton was that important. I'm going to be honest. You know, the fourth guy, fifth guy on the depth chart, I didn't know he'd have such a big impact being out, but he does. They have no shot plays. Keenan Allen is fine. I like Keenan Allen. He's still a great route runner. He's not a guy that's going to get you big explosive plays. Okay, he's a safety blanket. He's amazing at doing that. He's a great possession receiver. He's good in the red zone too, but he's not going to get you explosive plays. Mike Williams will do that, but then he's not a guy that really works in the middle of the field either. He's more of a deep threat guy, you know, contested. They need speed. They need speed. They have none. Mike Williams isn't really that fast. Keenan Allen's really not that fast. They have no one that can stretch the field. They need that.
Yeah, they need a three. And, you know, Keenan Allen, he was out most of the year with a hamstring injury. But even after that, like you said, he's a possession guy. He's kind of been like that his whole career. He's never really been that explosive. But like you said, I'm glad you brought it up. Playing Mike Williams on the last week of the regular season, no point. The guy already does have an injury history.
Yes.
Why are you playing him during this meaningless game? Because like you said, he would have made a huge impact on this Jacksonville secondary.
So I think going into the offseason, where we go from here, we got to get an offensive coordinator that Justin Herbert should have input in, because there's no reason that Justin Herbert and all of his talent and all of his God-given skill should have to do this. It is all on him to make this offense work. That's got to stop. We need to get someone with Austin Ekeler to form a 1-2 punch. I think Isaiah Spiller can do it. I like him. I like him coming out of college. We got to get someone who can grind the clock down, get the tough yards. Austin Ekeler is a, like we said, focal point. Great weapon. He's not a great running back. Get someone else. Still got Keenan Allen. I would look to move Mike Williams, I'm going to be honest. The best attribute is availability.
And he's never available.
He's never available. I mean, Keenan Allen really isn't that much either anymore. He gets injured a lot, too. Get some more weapons. They don't have to be expensive. I'm not talking going to trade for Tyreek Hill level, okay? Just get some guys who can stretch the field. They can be gadget players. We can draft a wide receiver. We can do that. That's the offensive side of the ball. That's for Justin Herbert, the offensive coordinator, the QB coach, those guys to figure out. Staley, you, what you need to do, figure out the defense. Why is there this much talent on this defense, and we can't hold a 27-point lead? Because Justin Herbert can't convert some third downs. Why is it when one corner goes out, our entire game plan fell apart? What happened?
And, you know, Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa both on the line, and they didn't really get to Trevor Lawrence in the second half. No. I mean, it's kind of inexcusable because, you know, those guys are viewed as some of the top pass rushers of the past, I'd say, 5-4 years.
Yeah.
Since Joey Bosa has been in the league, he's been known as a dominant pass rusher, and he didn't look like himself last game. But I'm glad he brought up receivers for Herbert, because look at what Herbert did without, I'd say, some of these guys aren't even wide receiver threes on some teams.
Yeah.
He put up amazing numbers.
Yeah. He had Joshua Palmer and DeAndre Carter as his 1 and 2 for most of the year.
Yeah. And imagine what he can do with a solid 1 and 2 receiver room.
Yeah, I mean, even if Keenan Allen and Mike Williams are just healthy, that helps. But imagine if those two are healthy and we also have a bunch of guys in the back end that, you know, maybe they're not ones and twos, but they serve an actual purpose in this offense. What does Joshua Palmer do? Why do I need him on the roster? He's a lesser version of Keenan Allen. I don't need that. He's fine as a wide receiver three, sure, if I have more dominant guys up top. But Keenan Allen and Mike Williams can't be treated as a T. Higgins, Jamar Chase duo. They are a perfectly fine wide receiver duo to have, but we need to upgrade the rest of the wide receiver room.
And we saw this game plan a little bit with Jacksonville last season. I mean, they brought in a lot of these guys to space out the field. I mean, Christian Kirk, Zay Jones they brought in.
Evan Ingram.
And guess what? They all caught touchdowns last game.
Yep.
I mean, it can be done. I mean, we're not saying that Jacksonville has an amazing wide receiver room. But
we saw they went and traded for Calvin Ridley. So yeah, they needed an upgrade still.
They still have a solid room where they can come back from 27-point deficits. I mean, yes. Trevor Lawrence, I think, is going to be amazing for years to come. But with a wide receiver room like this, this is something that the Chargers, I think, should try to model their room after. I don't see why not.
Yeah. I mean, I think Keenan Allen's going to stay, but I would do everything in my power to move Mike Williams and upgrade from him or use the money that we have spent in him. And I know he just signed that contract, so he's probably going to be impossible to move. But to get more weapons, like, it's insane how it's just Keenan Allen and Mike Williams. And if one of them goes out, we're starting guys that, I mean, I don't want to say Joshua Palmer is barely NFL roster material because he's fine. I think he's an okay wide receiver. But most of the other guys that are barely making NFL rosters.
I think it's going to be interesting to see because, honestly, I think Staley should be gone. I think it's kind of inexcusable for how he coached the last 2 weeks of the season for them. I get that players were out and, you know, Justin Herbert didn't look good in the second half. You can't put all the blame on him, though, like you said. You can't put all the blame on the defense as well. It's a collective effort, but I think it starts with the head coach.
Yep,
so
I agree.
I think it's going to be interesting to see. Anything else you want to talk about with the Chargers? We'll talk about Jacksonville a little bit later.
No.
And then we had the first Sunday game. Buffalo Bills ended up squeaking out a win, 34-31. This was a pretty entertaining game throughout most of it. I didn't expect it to be this close, even with some of the turnovers that Miami caused. Because Skylar Thompson, I get they put up 31 points, but he did not look good at all. I mean, he was a third stringer. But I think there should be some worry for Buffalo because you won a playoff game. That's great. But it was only a 3-point win against a third stringer to a 9-8 team.
They were up in the fourth quarter, Tommy.
Yeah.
And Josh Allen's average depth of target, so the average amount of yards that he was targeting a player on, was 26.3. Any pass above 20 yards is considered an explosive play. So only explosive plays pretty much is what he was targeting. And that comes from an inability to scheme a run game. They can't run the football. And I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think it's because of a lack of talent in the running back room. I like James Cook and Devin Singletary. Those two should be able to get a decent run game. Now, they're, you know, maybe James Cook isn't talented enough to pull, you know, make something out of nothing, and maybe Devin Singletary isn't that either. But this has been a problem for the last 3-4 years. We have no run game in Buffalo. And it's just like Justin Herbert, it's all on Josh Allen. And listen, I like Josh Allen, but man, coming down the stretches, he's been very reckless with the football. Now, it's fine, because he can wow you. He can throw absolute darts, you know, 50-mile-an-hour balls, and he can, you know, throw missiles down the field. But come playoff time, you got to play clean and concise. You turn the ball over a bunch, you're going to lose. That's the only reason the Dolphins were in this game, is because Josh Allen and the Bills turned the ball over a bunch. Had they played a clean game, Miami may have scored like 14 points, maybe. But it would have been a blowout. So I'm glad you said they should be worried, because I would be worried too. It's this close against a team that had no business being in this game, and Josh Allen continues to turn the ball over a bunch. I don't know if it's the elbow. I don't think it is. I think he's just putting way more added pressure on himself to be the driving force around the offense, because they have no run game. And really, I mean, outside of Stephon Diggs, there's not a whole lot of weapons on this team. Gabe Davis had an okay game, but it's Gabe Davis. We've talked about him all year. I'm not worried about Gabe Davis.
Yep. And I'm glad you brought that up, the running back room, or the running game in general, and Gabe Davis, because, you know, we've heard for the second half of the year, you keep hearing it during their games. Oh, they have one of the best running offenses in the second half of the year. Where is it? Is it Josh Allen doing all of it? Because they contained him, really. They didn't let him run a lot in this game. And the run game was okay at times. But like you said, this run game is not that great. And you brought up Gabe Davis. He had a big game. He had over 100 yards, 6 catches and a touchdown. But Miami's secondary is not that good. I don't view them as a team that should go out and get 2 interceptions in a playoff game. Yeah. I really don't.
And, you know, it's what's he going to do next week?
Yeah. I get that Bengals are kind of in the same situation, secondary. The secondary is not great, but they have some more playmakers than Miami do.
Yeah. And, you know, I look at Gabe Davis and I say, okay, you had 100 yards this game. What are you going to do next game? Is it going to be the 2 for 30? Is it going to be the 1 for 15? Am I going to get 4 for 30? You know what I mean? Like, I don't need you to put up 6 for 110 every week, sure. I need you to be consistent. I don't need you to go MIA. And underneath, there's nobody. You look, they brought back Cole Beasley for a reason, because they don't have anyone that can operate underneath. Dawson Knox is okay. He's a fine tight end. For as good as this offense is, it's actually amazing that it is this good when you actually step back and look at the weapons that are on this team, because it really is just Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs. And that goes to show how special Josh Allen is as a talent, that he can make this offense this good. But at the same time, we have got to be able to support him so he doesn't have to do everything. You do that, his numbers are going to be better, and he's not going to turn the ball over as much. He's a gunslinger. He's going to take risk. So the more he has to take risk, the more negative plays are going to come out of that. Sure, he's going to make it up with the 85-yard touchdown. But like we say, can't turn the ball over in the playoffs.
Because, honestly, this offense, you know, they hyper-target Diggs. And he is an amazing receiver. If you're able to just say, okay, we'll let Diggs get what he wants, we'll let him have his game, we just got to contain everyone else, really. You guys are fine if you're going against him. I mean, Miami almost did it. They were that close of a third stringer.
Yep.
Skylar Thompson, Joe Burrow, big difference. Huge difference. Honestly, Miami, 9-8 team. If they have Tua or I think Teddy Bridgewater in this game, I see it going the other way. I really do. I think, you know,
I can absolutely see that. And I think that Miami, I think a big thing for them is I think their defense is going to be a whole lot better than it was this year.
Yeah.
Going into next year. And it's just about the quarterback position. If Tua stays healthy, this team, you know, they'll do amazing things. Or if they decide to move away from Tua, whatever, I think they're going to keep him. If he stays healthy, they'll be contenders. And if they have injuries at the quarterback position, if they don't get serviceable backups, it's going to continue to be the same thing. They're going to be a 9-18.
And for me, I think you have to start looking for a replacement for Tua. I really do. I think, you know, I don't know if it's a good idea for him to play. I mean, he's coming off a season with 3 bad concussions.
I think he's going to play.
Yeah.
I think it's – you have to fill out the rest of the quarterback room. You got to go out and get a Ryan Fitzpatrick type to come in, and it can actually give you some valuable snaps if need be and won't absolutely tank your season. And I think they had that with Teddy, but, I mean, Teddy got injured too.
Like, yeah.
If we're relying on Skylar Thompson, the season is over. I'm sorry, but it is.
I think there's some good quarterbacks out there. I think that would fit in good into this Miami offense. I think, you know, Jimmy G is a free agent. I think Jimmy G would fit great in this Miami offense. Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle with Jimmy, I think they can put up some good numbers. There's talks, if they don't want to get Tua, try to go after Lamar too. Adding Lamar into this offense makes it even more explosive. I'm trying to think of who else is out there. I think there's options. They can go out and get Derek Carr. I think
a much more realistic, you know, if we're talking, I don't, like I said, I don't think they're going to replace Tua. But
yeah.
If they did, you know, Lamar, Derek Carr, those guys, even Jimmy. I think realistically, assuming they keep Tua, I don't think the Colts are going to keep Matt Ryan, bring in Matt Ryan to be a backup. Now, I know he didn't look good, but he's better than Teddy Bridgewater. He's much better than Skylar Thompson. Go get your old friend Jacoby Brissett back, because I don't think he's going to stay in Cleveland. He's much better than the quarterbacks you had on your roster, and he can keep a team afloat. But, yeah, there's good backups, and like you said, if you want to get rid of Tua, there's obviously options.
I think it's going to be interesting. One thing, I was shocked in this game because, you know, Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill didn't have great games. I get that they dropped some passes, but they weren't the best thrown passes, in my opinion. They were tough plays to make, even if they do complete them. I was kind of shocked that they didn't try to get maybe Hill and Waddle a little bit more involved in the run game a little bit, or maybe for some screen plays. I think, like you said, Miami, I think, can be a great team. The defense, I think, there are a lot of injuries on the defensive side for him this year. I think they're going to improve next year, and I think they're going to be – if they're causing 3 turnovers with this defense, I think they can easily do it with a defense at full strength and some of the playmakers getting right in the system. I think it's going to be interesting. Anything else you want to talk about with Miami? We'll talk about Buffalo a little bit more later with their playoff game.
No. Move it on.
We got the Giants going into Minnesota, getting a 31-24 win.
Make this quick. Daniel Jones played his best game as a pro.
Yeah.
And the Vikings defense is horrendous. That was pretty much the sum of the game.
Yeah, Vikings defense was nowhere to be found. Daniel Jones, especially in the second quarter, he just scrambled the whole drive. I mean, I want to say he finished the game with around like 80 yards rushing, but he made the throws that he needed to. He made the one read, got it there, or he went out of the pocket. Saquon with Saquon, that touchdown run, he went untouched. That was a beautiful run. Minnesota, the playmakers couldn't get involved. Now, Dalvin Cook had an average game. Justin Jefferson was quiet. TJ Hockenson was the best receiver. I mean, for Minnesota, you know what you got to work on. Defense is horrendous. Try to stick that offense together because the offense is very well. Season on the line, though, 4th and 8, I wouldn't be throwing that pass to TJ Hockenson.
Yeah, but I mean, I obviously agree. And it, you know, it looked like he kind of forgot what down it was, maybe.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, why is Justin Jefferson not the first read there? Why is he I can go on for days about this Vikings offense and how frustrating it is, but shout out to the Giants. They proved everyone wrong this year. Daniel Jones had his best game as a pro, one of the best playoff debuts we've ever seen, to be honest. And, I mean, this is a team with Isaiah Hodgins as their wide receiver one right now, so it's only on the up and up. And Brian Daboll should be the runaway winner for head coach of the year, for sure.
I don't see him not getting it. I think he's definitely earned it, and I don't think it's close. I really don't, compared to the other rookie head coaches. Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about the Giants and Philly matchup a little bit. Anything else you want to say about Minnesota?
Nope.
And then we got Bengals and Ravens. This one is closer than I thought it was going to be. Bengals end up winning 24-17, and not because of offensive standouts. It was an amazing defensive play. They took back a 99-yard fumble recovery. Tyler Huntley thought he got across. He didn't.
He didn't. He was not close.
It was not close. Amazing play by the Bengals. But in this game, you know, I'd be worried if I was the Bengals too, because Baltimore wasn't that high-powered. I get that Lamar's out, but their defense this whole year wasn't spectacular. You know, we said all year, their pass defense is shaky. And the pass
game, they had a lot of injuries. I think second half, they shaped up a little bit in the second half.
They shaped up, but this Baltimore team, maybe it's because it's divisional, maybe that, but they kind of figured them out.
Yeah.
If they didn't get that fumble, I think the Ravens might be moving on.
No. Really? No, there's no shot. I watched the last minute and a half of that game. You can't tell me they were moving on. Based off of that alone, Tommy, season on the line, 3rd and 11, 56 seconds left. I have Andy Isabella on the field
as one
of my wide receivers.
It would have been 24-17 Baltimore if they scored on that Huntley play.
Yeah.
How much time is left?
Enough for Cincinnati to go back and score. They had like, what, 4 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes?
Yeah, but they couldn't even make it down the field half the second half.
Yeah, but putting that, I have no faith in Baltimore off of what I saw their offense do. Listen, man, there's no weapons.
There is no weapon. We've been saying that the whole year. We've been saying
none.
That
even with Bateman, and I think Bateman's an okay wide receiver. None. It's Mark Andrews and a bunch of bums. J.K. Dobbins, rightfully so, threw the team under the bus, said he's tired of being held back. He's the best player on that offense, not named Lamar Jackson, and they don't use him. Gus Edwards, okay, but he's an average running back.
Tyler Huntley,
he's bad. Why did he throw the ball 29 times?
I get that there's frustration with J.K. Dobbins. I just don't think he did it in the right way.
Oh, absolutely. But at the same time, I think it got Greg Roman fired. So, and that's another domestic terrorist. So, you know, I'm fine with it. Greg Roman should have been fired last year. He has this tendency to hold on and be a barnacle and not get fired when he should be fired. I think his system is great the first year. It's placed on a new team. Because it's a very run-heavy system. Running backs love it. It's usually with a mobile quarterback. They look great in it. And then once the weapons start to thin out on that offense, Greg Roman is incapable of making adjustments, and the team looks awful. That's exactly what happened in San Francisco. That's exactly what happened in Baltimore.
Do you think they go out and get themselves a weapon through the draft or free agency if you're them?
I think it'll have to be both. I think you go into next year, you have Dobbins. You got Lamar. Well, they have to bring Lamar back, but I hope they do. Lamar, Dobbins, Mark Andrews, Rashad Bateman, and Isaiah Likely. Everyone else, and Patrick Ricard, because he's a great blocking fullback, and, you know, if the offensive coordinator comes in and he wants, you know, still run that power scheme, that's fine. Everyone else on this offense should be gone. And I'm not kidding. Every single other person on that offense should be gone. They should not be on the roster next year. Everyone.
I'm still 50-50 whether Lamar stays or not, just because a lot of people think he's going to stay, but they kind of messed around with him, I think, a little bit too much.
What's going to happen? Tell me they're gonna franchise tag him regardless.
And does he sit out?
Okay, if he sits out, he's going to get moved in the offseason. They can franchise tag him again.
I think they're in an interesting situation. Because the defense, I like the core of this defense with, I think Kyle Hamilton played amazing for them in this game. He had a big turnover. I think there's your guy in the young secondary. Marlon Humphrey, they still have. How about the Roquan Smith signing? What do you think of extending him? Do you think that was a good move?
Yeah, I like that. I like him and Patrick Queen as their linebackers. I think a lot of their pass rushers were injured. And I think that, you know, I think that's what really hurt them. But I think having your pass rush actually be healthy next year will be a huge impact for them. I'm only concerned about the offensive side of the ball and how terrible it was. And let's get this notion that Lamar Jackson can't run another offense out. He ran a pro-style offense at Louisville and was amazing in it.
Won a Heisman with it.
Yes. Let's stop this. He can run a pro-style offense. Why are we in pistol running the ball 40 times? If Lamar was on the Browns, they would be the best team in the AFC North. With Kevin Stefanski and Lamar Jackson, be the best team in the AFC North. If Deshaun Watson was on Baltimore, they would be the worst team in the AFC North. I don't know. It'd be really close between them and Pittsburgh.
I'm going to give
you. And honestly, if Pittsburgh got another offensive coordinator outside of Matt Canada, who I think is terrible as well, if they had a different one who actually used their weapons and Kenny Pickett continues to develop, they might be better. This offense is terrible. It's awful. It needs to be revamped. I'm fine with having a good run game. I love amazing run games. I love that the 49ers run the ball a ton. I love that. I love run games. It has to be able to involve explosive plays. Greg Roman's offense doesn't do that. It doesn't. It's incomprehensible to him to throw the ball.
I think if they sign Lamar, you're going to see a lot more throws. I think it's about time to let it loose, run a different style of offense, because I think Lamar's more than capable, and I think he'll probably stay healthier. Yes. He had two injuries the last 2 years. I think it's from the style of offense they run. Speaking of injuries, though, the Cincinnati line's getting banged up on the offensive end. I think this could be a game changer for him, because we've seen that, yes, Joe Burrow's played amazing. The offense has played great, even with an offensive line that's been not banged up but not as good before. But I think coming down the stretch, I think teams, they're kind of figuring them out a little bit more when their offensive line is banged up. So I think this is something that could be a scare for Cincinnati. The run game, it went back to what it was before.
Yeah, they figured it out for about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And it's back to being negative.
And Jamar Chase had a good game. The receiving room is doing what they're doing. Hayden Hurst is getting involved. Hayden Hurst is making some big plays for him, I think.
Hit the best white boy gritty I've ever seen.
It wasn't even close.
It saved my life, to be honest.
Who's coming up against him? Mike Gesicki?
Yeah, that's probably it. Kirk Cousins. I don't know. Kirk Cousins might have a good gritty. We haven't seen it.
We saw it once.
Yeah, we did.
I think Hayden Hurst is a lot better than that, I will say. Anything else you want to add for these two teams?
No, Cincinnati will go as far as Joe Burrow takes them, because their run game's bad. And, you know, I think I might get a couple of their offensive linemen back before this next game, hopefully. Although I don't know if they'll need him against Buffalo, to be honest. I think that game's going to be a shootout. And, you know, I think they're going to just going to be on Joe Burrow and Higgins and Hayden Hurst and Chase. It's going to be on their shoulders to win that game.
It's going to be an interesting game. I think it's potentially could be the best game of the weekend. Last playoff or wild card game I want to go over. Cowboys-Buccaneers, Cowboys 31-14. I think this was Dak Prescott's best game he's played in his career.
It absolutely, yeah, I would say in career. I was going to say career. I didn't know what you were going to say. Absolutely. He was phenomenal. This offense looked unstoppable.
Yeah. And honestly, I think it's because the offensive line held up for him. He had a very clean pocket almost the whole game. I want to say he was sacked once, but he made the throws that he needed to. He didn't force anything, and he looked like he figured something out. Extra points, though, were not figured out in this game for him.
It's a footnote now that they won, but at the time when Brett Maher missed the third one, I said Tom Brady's going to win this game by three. And I'm glad it didn't happen. But speaking of Brady and the Bucks, Tommy, this is it. The Greg Roman offense can't throw the ball. Tampa Bay can't run it. Tom Brady had 66 pass attempts in this game. 66. Yeah. He had 351 yards, and they put up 14 points.
They ran the ball 9 times in this game, too, Tampa.
Listen, I don't know what has happened. I don't know if Brady's washed. I don't know what to feel about Brady, because to me, throwing the ball 66 times, if you look like, see, when I think washed, right, when we're talking about Hall of Fame quarterbacks, you know what the one that comes to my mind is? Peyton Manning at the end of his career was washed. Like, he looked like he shouldn't be anywhere near a football field. Like, won a Super Bowl. We shouldn't have been anywhere near football field.
It was a rough season that last year. He got benched halfway
through. Tom Brady, on the other hand, yes, it finally looks like Father Time has caught up to him. Sure, yeah, pretty much. Father Time has caught up to him, absolutely. But he doesn't look bad. Like, he doesn't look good by any stretch of the imagination. But I can't comprehend this being his fault, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it just, the offense is just bad. I don't think he's going to be back. They fired Byron Leftwich, who kind of got scapegoated. Todd Bowles, I think, lost the locker room a little bit. I think he could potentially be a problem. But the defense is horrendous. All that talent, they played soft zone all night, and Dak Prescott just torched them. I mean, torched them. The offense was unstoppable.
Dalton Schultz had himself a day against that that defense. And Dalton Schultz is a solid tight end, but he shouldn't be having 2 touchdowns against this defense with the talent.
Yeah, just Tampa Bay is just, it's done. It's done. It's the end of the road for them. It's time to move on. All those parties should separate. Honestly, if Tom Brady leaves, it's time to tear it down.
You're
not in a position to get a quarterback unless you think you're going to be able to get Jimmy. Like, if you can get Jimmy Garoppolo, sure, keep doing what you're doing, I guess. But Leonard Fournette should be going. Julio's should retire. Please retire, Julio. Please retire on a high note. You had a fully healthy game. You scored a touchdown. Please go out like that. Don't come back for another season. I don't want to be disappointed anymore. Mike Evans. Kind of a weird year for him, but he's still fine. I think you keep him to let him retire as a Buck. Chris Godwin,
he's still good.
Like, I think you keep Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, but I don't know, man. This is it's definitely a transition period, because I do think Brady will leave.
I think so too. I'm gonna be honest. That was the first game that I've watched from Brady where I was like, man, this is not the Tom Brady that I've watched.
Yeah, I mean, he looks old now, okay? He looks like a veteran quarterback. He doesn't look like prime Tom Brady. But guess what? You could still win one of those guys.
You can.
He doesn't look like a negative quarterback. He doesn't. I don't look at this Tampa Bay offense and say, wow, if they had a different quarterback, they'd win. No. You could put any quarterback in the league on this offense the way it was ran this year, and it'd be the same result.
The thing I will say about Brady is, you know, we say, you know, he's amazing inside the hash marks. Even on throw, I get he was pressured a lot, but even on throws he wasn't pressured, he wasn't as accurate as we're used to seeing him. So yeah. I don't know where he goes from here. I think he needs to just take time away from football, decompress, because I think one of the main reasons for a little bit underperforming throughout the whole year from him, I think the media kind of got to him with his the pressure of like having his personal life put out there, with going through the divorce. That's probably a burden on him, but he needs to take time, decompress, and say, do I really want to come back for another year?
That's my thing, because if he leaves Tampa Bay, you got to go through a whole process of learning a different offense. Even if he goes to the Raiders with Josh McDaniels, you're going to have to learn a different offense, learn a different personnel group, you know, learn a different culture. And that's, you know, yeah, he won the Super Bowl with Tampa Bay his first year there. Sure. Like, you know, great. And only, you know, the only way that Tom Brady could do it, right? The most dramatic way. But that was like storybook. He walked into the perfect.
Yeah.
Fit. Like Bruce Arians. Yeah. And then they had a great offensive line that underperformed. He had a defense loaded with talent and they just got much better coaching. It was amazing. The Raiders are not that.
I was just about to say.
No other team he could walk into could be like that Buccaneers team. And I'm tired of people acting like he made that Buccaneers team amazing. That team was loaded with talent. They were just poorly coached.
And they had Jameis Winston.
And they had Jameis Winston, yes.
So I
don't know. If he does go, right, if he goes, is he going to play 2 years? Is he going to play 3 years? I think that's what he needs to ask himself, because if his goal, he's got to be competing for something other than just playing football. He wants to win championships. I think that's because if he didn't want to win championships anymore, he'd be retired.
Yeah. Why? I mean, if you don't want to win a championship, why play though? So I get that.
So if you're going in, it needs to be a 2 year plan, because you're not walking into a Tampa Bay situation again. It's not going to happen.
I mean,
the only team that could do that, to be honest, Tommy, there's two. I don't think, maybe three if you count the Jets, but I don't. Wouldn't count the Jets, even though I do like their defense. The only two I could see is Miami. I don't think they're going to move off of Tua, and San Francisco. And I don't think San Francisco is going to go for Tom Brady.
No, just I also want to go back to the Raiders for one quick point. If he goes to the Raiders, he's facing Kansas City twice. And the Chargers twice. Does he really want to do that?
And Denver twice. Denver's defense is not bad.
Yeah.
It's a great defense.
I don't think
tough games.
I don't see him going at least to AFC West. If Miami wasn't moving on from Tua, I could see it because he was linked there before Tampa. I know he really wanted to go to Miami before. San Fran, I wouldn't if I was them. Brock Purdy, I think, he's taken over. I really do. I think you got to let him – if he makes a deep run and wins another game, I think you got to give it to him. I wouldn't bring in Brady because I think it kind of – it breaks up a little bit of a flow. Trey Lance is going to China now after Brock Purdy performing. I don't see a smart move for San Fran if they bring in Tom Brady. I think it's going to be –
you just turn into the Colts.
Yeah.
You just keep bringing in vets year after year. With the team that you have trying to win, and that's just not a good way to go down.
And we see what it's done to Indy.
Yep.
I mean, it can be disastrous. Anything else you want to talk about from this game before we go into the next games?
The Dallas looked amazing.
Yeah.
But I think it needs to be asterisks. This is not an amazing team they beat. It's a playoff team, sure. They were 8-9.
Yeah.
They lost a game to Carolina. This is not a great team they beat, okay? So, listen, I'm not saying that the 49ers are going to cakewalk or dog walk the Cowboys. They're not. It's going to be a tough game. But this ain't happening. What they did to Tampa is not going to happen against San Francisco. Dak Prescott played the best game of his career, sure. It wasn't against an elite defense. He's going to have to play an elite defense this weekend.
We'll segue into games of this week. We'll start with Dallas San Fran. It's the last game on the playoff schedule, 6:30 Sunday. You want to start off?
Yeah. I'll keep it on the Dallas side. But I think this team is better than last year's team that lost to San Francisco at home. However, I think this is the best San Francisco 49ers team I have ever seen. And now, I didn't watch, I wasn't born for Joe Montana and Steve Young, right? I was too young for the Jess Garcia team. But I've seen some pretty good teams. I saw the 2012 team. We're better than the 2012 team. I saw the 2019 team. It's close. It's close to 2019. I think the front four in the 2019 team might be a little bit better. But our secondary is much better, our linebackers are better, and our offensive weapons is not even comparable. So it all comes down to quarterback play. And Brock Purdy is playing better than Jimmy Garoppolo ever has in a 49ers uniform. And he's more mobile, and he's able to do the same things Jimmy does, but extend plays. Therefore, it's better quarterback play. So this is the best San Francisco team I've ever seen. So on Dallas side, what do they do well, Tommy? They have a great run game. The 49ers have a great run defense. The best run defense. The team that put up the most rushing yards against us was the Raiders. I think they put up like 65, 66, something like that. The player, Tommy, the running back that had the best game against us, you know who it was?
Let me hear it.
Christian McCaffrey, when he was on the Panthers, he had over 100 scrimmage yards. He's on the 49ers now. So anyway, Dak Prescott has 15 turnovers. Now, people will bring up the turnover rate and how it's low and how he also has a bunch of explosive plays. Sure, that's how they're going to beat us, is explosive plays, if they pick on the secondary and our pass rush doesn't get there. But Tommy, this is... It's the same Cowboys team, but it's the same formula for a Cowboys team that we've seen. It's big plays. It's the defense causing these turnovers. What happens when they don't get those?
Very stagnant.
Exactly. Yeah. It's in the details. Now, our defense is going to have to be in the details, really focused on stopping this inside zone. It's a Mike McCarthy scheme. It's a lot of inside zone, a lot of power man. But we match up so well against them. I expect that Nick Bosa is going to be lined up on Jason Peters and Tyron Smith. And Tyron Smith had a tough time moving to right tackle. He's had a tough time over there. I'll let you talk about the Dallas side before I go to San Francisco side. But I'm worried if I'm Dallas because, yes, everyone is talking about you and they're hyping you up because you beat Tampa Bay. You just lost to the Commanders. And I know it's a playoff game. That game still had seeding implications. That was an important game.
Yeah. And
this team is just, they're good, but are they great? Because I think the 49ers are great. And I don't know if they're great.
My thing is with this Dallas team is you're going to have to worry about Nick Bosa. I get Tyron Smith is an amazing tackle, amazing career. We don't know what he's going to look like against Nick Bosa. He's on the right side.
He's playing right tackle. Yeah. He's played left tackle his whole career.
And Jason Peters is also banged up. I don't know if he's going to play. I believe he's still 50-50. I don't want to say it's a huge loss for him because he was kind of in and out the whole year for him, but it's still some concern. The pass rush has to get to Purdy for the defense because we've seen the last, I'd say about month in the regular season, the pass rush rate for this Dallas defense went down. And I get that Micah is – he's not rushing the passer as much on those games, and he's getting double-teamed, but it's working out still. So someone else is going to have to step up, like someone who they paid, DeMarcus Lawrence, if Micah Parsons not going to get there. So I think it's going to be interesting seeing Parsons and going – against Purdy? I do, because I think this is a big test for Purdy. Because if Micah gets to him, how's he going to react? That's what I want to see. As for Dallas on the offensive side, like you said, you kind of have to exploit the corners on the outside, which they do a lot of plays towards that way. Do I think they should with Dak? No. But do they do him anyway? Yes. CeeDee Lamb, I think he's really the only receiver you have to worry about. I'm not afraid of Michael Gallup. He hasn't really had the year that he's had before. Noah Brown's solid, but he's nothing spectacular. They brought in T.Y. Hilton. Yeah, he's a good possession guy. He's doing what he needs to do. Dalton Schultz, he's going to be matched up with one of the linebackers. Fred Warner's going to cover him almost the whole game if he goes out in pass routes. And he's going to do an amazing job because Fred Warner is an amazing linebacker, probably the best in the NFL. So I think for Dallas, you have to win some of these key matchups. You have to have your pass rush get there. That's one. Number two, you got to keep a clean pocket for Dak. I think that's the only way you succeed.
Yeah, and I don't see it happening.
I mean,
the 49ers pass rush is so deep, and D'Amico Ryan schemes it up so well. They're good against the inside zone. The Raiders tried to run in on us. We stuffed that. Wide zone, we're good against wide zone. And a lot of the time when the Cowboys are running this offense well and efficiently, it's because of the run game getting chunk plays after chunk play and being able to move the ball down the field that way. And then you get Dak in the red zone and can do a lot of things down there. You're not going to do that against the 49ers. Now, I'll eat my words if they come out and they rush for 150 yards on us, 160 yards, 770 yards, and just absolutely maul us up front. I'll eat my words and say Dallas came out and played spectacularly. More likely than not, it is going to be extremely hard to run against us. And it's going to be on Dak's shoulders. Javarius Ward's going to be on CeeDee Lamb a whole lot, so that's not an easy matchup. Now, Lenore, you know, he'll be on CeeDee Lamb some, then he'll go over to Michael Gallup or Noah Brown, and you can kind of play with that matchup. But, you know, we were talking about him last game being a kind of a weak point. He played phenomenal against Seattle. So I don't know. I love Jimmy Ward at nickel. Hufanga, like, we play physical, everyone gets to the ball, we're a great tackling team. It's going to be extremely hard for this offense to be that good like they were against Tampa. And I think it's all going to fall on Dak's shoulders. He's going to have to play as good, if not better, than he played against Tampa Bay. And just from what I've seen, I don't think he can do it.
Yeah.
Therefore, I'm going to say the 49ers win this game. I'm not going to say handily, because I do think it's going to be a tough game. I think they'll get to Purdy. It'll be the biggest test he's had. But I do think they're going to lose. On the 49ers side of the ball, look, I watched the Commanders game to see why they lost. And, you know, something interesting that I saw, and I think it's going to end up being the way the 49ers run the ball, because everyone talks about Dallas being able to stop the run too. Tommy, in that Commanders game, they ran the ball away from Micah Parsons. A lot of people have done this a lot, but the Commanders really focused in on it. They ran the ball away from him. And Tommy, an interesting thing they did is on those plays, they kicked that tackle on Micah Parsons' side out and made him fake a pass block. What that did was Micah Parsons had to commit to his pass rush moves, or it made him commit to his pass rush moves. Therefore, he wasn't able to chase down those run plays from the backside, use that amazing motor and speed that he has to disrupt that. What that also did is it put all the stress on the linebackers on the weak side of the line to not over-pursue that wide zone, because that's what the Commanders ran against them, was wide zone. Who's the best wide zone play caller the NFL has maybe ever seen? It's Kyle Shanahan. The 49ers run it the best out of anybody. If your linebackers have poor eye discipline and your weak side over-pursues, the cutback lanes are there. Elijah Mitchell and Christian McCaffrey hit those better than maybe any back tandem in the league. Deebo Samuel can do it. And you don't – that's how the Commanders ran the ball. They got cutback lanes. That big chunks of their runs were on cutback plays. Cutback lanes that opened up because the defense over-pursued and Micah Parsons wasn't able to run the play down from behind. If the Commanders can do that, the 49ers are going to do that. And another thing, your second level has to tackle. No one in that Cowboys secondary can tackle. A lot of times they have Chuck Clark in the box. Again, eye discipline. The 49ers are going to throw a whole bunch of stuff at you. Pre-motion. Pre-snap. You have to account for it. And Tommy, we've talked about it. It's an embarrassment of riches. Debo can be in the backfield. They can put Juszczyk back there, and then they can motion him out. McCaffrey can be back there. Kittle can be in a traditional inline tight end spot, and he can split out wide. How do you stop all that? I don't know if there's a defense that can, and the Cowboys' defense is amazing. I get it. But they have struggled against wide zone. And if they can't stop the run, your pass rush isn't going to get to Purdy. So Purdy's a non-factor, as long as he doesn't turn the ball over on dropbacks. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be an extremely tough game.
I think also two of the linebackers for the Cowboys, I don't think Van Der Esch played in that Commanders game. Van Der Esch is going to have to step up, though. He had a good game against Tampa, but it was more in pass coverage, I felt like. He's going to have to step up on some of those runs like you're talking about. I think that's going to be key. I have the Niners in this one. I just think, like you said, they're just that Dallas team is better from what it was last year, but that San Fran team's even better than what they were last year.
Yeah, and I think it'll be similar to how that game was. Maybe Dallas will have the ball with a chance to tie it or score and win. And it's just, it's very tough. It's going to be a tough matchup. And I just think that Dallas is not prepared, or they're underestimating how much they're going to be asked to do on the defensive side of the ball to stop this offense. Because last year it was like, well, can the 49ers defense keep them in the game, and can they get enough plays on the offense? This we're averaging 36 points a game since Brock Purdy was in, or since Christian McCaffrey became the starter in Brock Purdy's games. Think about 36 points a game. We're talking about the highest scoring offense with the Cowboys. The 49ers can match that.
Yeah.
So if we get in a shootout, that's fine. So it's really whose defense is going to show up? And I'm more inclined to say San Francisco's defense shows up from what they've showed me in the second half.
I think it's the highest ticket prices for a playoff game out of all of them. So I think it's going to be a good one, though, I will say. We'll stick with NFC. The Giants going to Philly.
I think this is the end of the road for the Giants. But I think Philly minus 7.5 is a trap. I'm going to be honest. I think the game is going to be close, actually. Brian Daboll has just gotten a lot out of Daniel Jones. I think this is going to end up being a talent gap, is what this is going to end up being. I just don't think they're going to have enough to stop the Eagles or keep up with the Eagles in this game. But it'll be a close game.
I'm glad you brought up the talent gap, because for me, it's Philly just has a lot more playmakers than the Giants. I also think, too, Philly's linebackers and some of their edge guys, they're a lot better than Minnesota's. So this
is much better coached.
Yeah. I mean, Bradbury and Slay, those corners. The fact that Bradbury was on the Giants and they cut him and he signs with Philly, I think – I don't know how you cut a guy like that. I think Bradbury's a great corner. I also think Daniel Jones is going to stay in the pocket a little bit more than what we saw in Minnesota. I think part of the reason why he had his best game of his career was because he was able to move outside the pocket, and that added to the element, okay, is he throwing this time, or is he going to go on the run? I think Philly might contain that a little bit. But honestly, I think the biggest playmaker is going to be Jalen Hurts. I really do.
Yeah.
He may not be 100%, but he might not need to be 100% to beat this team. So I think it's going to be interesting. I'm going Philly. Also, they're going into Philly in the playoffs. Tough environment to play in. I think, you said, it's going to be close. I think Giants defense can keep them in it. If the offense can get past the well-coached defense. Because if you think about it, there's not a lot of holes in this Philly defense. The only hole I could see is the run game a little bit.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's what's going to have to. They're going to have to get creative with moving the ball because, yeah. I mean, it really falls on Saquon and Daniel Jones' shoulders. As good as Isaiah Hodgins has been, I'm not counting on Isaiah Hodgins, right? I'm not counting on any of those pass catchers. So it's going to be on Barkley and Daniel Jones to create a great run game and to scheme it up. And you know, if they can move the ball on the ground and keep them in it and get some scores, then this will be a very close game. Now, I think if Philly shuts down that run game, we might, I'm not going to say blowout, but it might be a comfortable win for Philly.
I'm going Philly as well. We'll move over to AFC side. Anything else you wanted to add for that game or no?
No.
AFC side, first one we'll go Kansas City welcoming Jacksonville. How do you think this one ends out?
For my betting folks, this is a trap. -9, it's a trap. Now, the Chiefs could definitely blow them out. In my opinion, it's a trap. I think the Jaguars' offense is the exact type of offense that Kansas City struggles with. I think I was watching Brett Coleman, and he broke it down. And, you know, he said that schematically, the Jaguars are very – they match up very well against the Chiefs. I'm going to take the Chiefs to win. But I do think the Jaguars are going to surprise some folks. Now, if they come out there and Trevor Lawrence throws 4 picks, well, you're going to get blown out because the Chiefs aren't going to let you back in the game. But I do think the Jaguars can make this a competitive game.
I smell a shootout. I really do. Just because Kansas City's defense is better than what people thought it could be. I will say that. But it's definitely not great still. But when you have an offense like theirs, it really doesn't matter. So I think it's just going to be if Jacksonville plays a mistake-free game, this could go their way or very close. But I think Kansas City, they're just you can't really bet against them. You can't. Just because you've seen it so many times where they'll get the ball late and they'll get a game-winning touchdown, game-winning field goal. I think, you know, if Andy Reid coaching them, the playmakers they have, I just don't see them losing this one. But I think it's going to be very close. And then we'll finish it off. Cincinnati heading to Buffalo. Before we start, I want to say this should be a neutral game site. It really should. Because
we can get in. Yeah, I agree with you. But
that's
a very long conversation.
Yeah. But it's going to be Buffalo hosting Cincinnati. Oh, who you got?
I'm taking Cincinnati. Now, we said that both of these teams should be concerned after their wild card games. I agree. I think Cincinnati should be less concerned than Buffalo. Again, it's going to be a Josh Allen show. And I think eventually that's going to catch up to you. And I think Cincinnati will be the team to do it. And I think Joe Burrow is a better quarterback. I'm going to be honest. I think that he's 2. I think Allen's 3. Obviously, it's close. But I just think Cincinnati's just the better team. And I think that's, even on the road, I think they'll win.
I saw a graphic pop up. I forget what I was on. But it was like, which wide receivers are you taking? Stephon Diggs and Gabe Davis or T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase? Give me Cincinnati's wide receiver room all day. I think this is going to be a very offensive game. And I'm going Cincinnati based off the playmakers alone in the offense. Joe Burrow, he's an amazing quarterback. Josh Allen's an amazing quarterback as well. They both do so many great things. But I've seen Joe Burrow stay cool under pressure. He doesn't try to force things. He doesn't try to make a play when he doesn't have to. He's been criticized with some of the third down sacks, but you're trying to extend the play. I don't think he tries to force the ball a lot. I think Josh Allen tries to force it a little bit too much, and I think he saw that against Miami. I think he saw on the first interception because they didn't need to throw a 50-yard bomb. All they had to do was run out the clock in the first half, and they would have had a lead. I don't see Buffalo's playmakers outplaying Cincinnati's playmakers in this one.
Yeah, I just think it's going to come down to the better offense and the better scheme and just who's been playing better. And Cincinnati has been playing much better football than Buffalo. Could Buffalo win this game? Absolutely. I think it's a 50-50. I think it's a toss-up. But I'm going to – I'm more comfortable betting on Cincinnati to win this than I am Buffalo.
I think we're set for good games all this while, or this round, the divisional round. I really do. Because I think Jacksonville and Kansas City can be a close game. I think Dallas, San Fran can be a close game. I think the Giants and Eagles can be a close game. I think we're in for some exciting moments in the NFL, I will say. I think that's about it for this week. Anything else you want to add?
No, man. It's a great episode.
We'll be back next week. We'll see if Jordan will be in some seasonal depression or...
I won't be here next week if we lose. That's not happening.
I'm going to have to ride solo?
Yeah, it'll be a solo episode.
Oh, okay.
It's going to take me at least 2 weeks to get over it.
I've seen it happen before. It happened a couple years ago. It does take me a while. I will attest to that. That's all for us today. Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of The Locker Room. Hope you guys enjoyed. We'll see you next time.
Peace.